definitely. I'm Dami, and I'm an alcoholic. This is the first time I've ever spoke at a podium in AA, and the first time I've ever shared my story. My sobriety date is January 23rd, 2015, and I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor who has a sponsor who I'm pretty sure has a sponsor. He's really old, but I'm pretty sure he does, or she does, rather. So what it was like, let's see. I'll just start when I was born. I just recently asked my mother about my breastfeeding habits because I'm in nursing school, and I was kind of curious, like, what I was like as an infant and just, like, as a child. And she told me that I was a very needy baby and that I was always trying to, like, have more food, just always trying to eat, eat, eat. And I was like, oh, that's funny. So, like, I've kind of always had, like, a drinking, you know, like, wanted to drink more. And, you know, it's just like, I don't know if that's what, you know, I don't know if from birth I was an alcoholic. I just thought it was kind of funny that, like, I always, like, wanted to eat more and more and more. And, you know, she told me I was just very sensitive and all that kind of stuff. And I asked my dad what I was like as a kid. And he told me that my sister was like a little monk, and then me and my brothers were little terrors. And I was like, can you please explain? And he kind of just said, you know, I was always like very hyperactive, and I was. I was very a very hyperactive child. I didn't like to sit, and I liked to go. You know, and I don't know necessarily if these things made me more likely to be an alcoholic. I don't know. I don't really go too much into that, why I'm an alcoholic, because I used to. I used to really, like, focus on that, like, what's wrong with me, why me, like, why, you know, what made me this way, and I just learned that, like, that really wasn't fruitful for me, you know. I'm not going to ever find out exactly, you know, why I'm an alcoholic. I just, you know, I think it's partly genetic, maybe, I don't know. But I did. I used to try to figure out, like, why am I this way? Because as a kid, I kind of always felt different from all the other kids. I think I've heard that a lot in other people's stories, and it's something that I definitely related to when I first came in and listening to speakers was that, you know, just as a kid, like, I kind of always was uncomfortable in my own skin and wasn't really sure, like, and that kind of started when I was in probably second grade. I don't have a lot of memories from, like, what it was like before that, but I have an older sister and a younger brother, and my older sister and I, we always got along, and she was always, like, a really good kid, and so I was very different from her, but I, you know, kind of always looked at her as a poster child and, like, something that I wanted to be like. So I just remember, you know, really, like, admiring my sister from a young age and trying to, like, do kind of the things that she did. So I was like, oh, she's this great kid, like, you know, and I don't specifically remember those thoughts, but, you know, she played the flute. So I was like, I'm going to play the flute, you know, just little things like that. So when we were in second grade, I was born in this area in Jeffersonton, Virginia, and lived there until I was about 7, which I guess is like the second grade area. And we moved to Massachusetts, which was like culture shock. You know, I mean, that young, I didn't really know what was going on, like how far of a distance it was or like how different it was. But I just remember like the kids were a lot different. And I was kind of like, holy crap, like what do I do? Like, you know, where am I? And so I immediately tried to find, like, a group to fit in with and, like, you know, be like all the other kids so that they wouldn't think I was different and whatnot. And I remember it was shortly after I moved up there. I had this idea that if I was, like, if I looked smart or something, that I would, like, fit in better. I don't know why, but so I had an eye exam for glasses, just, like, an annual eye exam to see if you need glasses. And I faked it. so that I could get glasses, so that I could look smart. And I don't know where that idea came from, but I think it's just like my sister was really good in school, and I was like, okay, if I look smart, you know, everybody's going to... And I ended up with these glasses that were huge, and it was just like not what was cool back then. The big ones are coming back, but it wasn't when I was in second grade, so I didn't wear them. And my mom was so mad. She was like, you need to wear these glasses. Like, you know, they were expensive. You know, you're prescribed. Like, how are you going to see? And I was like, I'm going to be fine. Like, I'm not wearing those. I don't remember whatever happened with that, if she was mad or not, but I don't think I ever told her either until, like, adulthood. I did tell her eventually, but, you know, so I just always was trying to, like, and that's when I really remember that happening with second grade, like, trying to just not being sure of myself and not feeling like I was, it's not even that I wasn't good enough, but it was just like, okay, what do I have to do to, like, get, you know, feel accepted? So through school, I was a good student. I was a little hyperactive, but I was smart. So like I just really like at recess, I just exploded and just like ran around, you know, like crazy, and then was a little calmer in class. So going through school, like around like 7th and 8th grade, I kind of remember like, you know, starting to develop and being kind of like, you know, I don't know, I guess all my other friends like knew what was going on and I really didn't. And, you know, that was weird. So, you know, whatever, I just kind of moved along, but I wasn't really comfortable with myself. And I just remember that, like, just not feeling like everybody else was comfortable with themselves, but I wasn't for some reason. And I don't really know like why that was or how to describe that, but it's just how I felt. And I remember the summer before 9th grade was when I had my first alcoholic drink. I was friends with these girls from one town who were friends with these girls from another town. And I grew up on an island. It's off the coast of Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And it's about the size of Culpeper County, so it's just like a really small place. And you have to take a boat to get off of it. You have to take a 45-minute ferry ride to go to a mainland where there's, like, Walmart. We didn't have Walmart. They banned it. They said we couldn't have, like, anything fast food. So I never had fast food until I was, like, 12. And it was just, like, its own little world. So everybody knew everybody except, you know, when we were kids. So I started meeting all these other kids from, like, different towns. And the one town that these kids were from was, like, the... I don't want to say cool town, but it was like the edgy town. It was like, you know, those kids were doing things that we weren't in Edgartown. It was very strange how it worked, but and where I lived on an island off of the island where I had to take a 3-car ferry that was very small to get to the island that I lived on, which was 6 miles. And so there was nothing. There was one store that was the size of the bathroom, and they had, like, random things. I don't know. It was just very small, very kind of sheltered, I would say, you know, just a very safe, you know, isolated, cold place. In the summer it was nice, though. But so I started meeting these kids from the town next over, and like I said, they were a little bit more edgy. They were... I don't know. It's just what it was. That's just how it was. Edgartown was a little bit more, like, proper. And then where I lived, like I said, was very isolated. And I just remember, like, taking an immediate, like, liking to them. They seemed, you know, like, it seemed cool. Like, they're edgy, and I had never been exposed to that. And my one friend, her mom drank wine, boxed wine, which I didn't know anything about alcohol. I had never seen it in my house. My parents didn't drink growing up that I'm aware of. I think my mom might have had some cooking wine, like, in the cupboard, but I never really paid any attention to it before I was about 14. And, you know, now I know that my dad had been in rehab when my sister was born, but I wasn't born yet. And he had gone to a few Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Today, he doesn't identify himself as an alcoholic. I don't know what the story is there, but he said, you know, it wasn't, he didn't need it, and he seems fine today. I think there might be a little pot smoking going on there, but he keeps it kind of hidden, I guess. I don't know. I don't try to investigate too much. But anyway, so, you know, like I said, I just didn't know that, I didn't know anything about alcohol or anything about, you know, drugs or anything before I was like 14. And so she stole some wine in a water bottle out of her mom's boxed wine, and we drank it. And I just remember thinking how disgusting it tasted, but the warm feeling that it gave me. And like, I mean, I was just trying to get more out of that water bottle. And I was like, man, there's not enough for both of us. Like, there's just not. And I had that thought. And so that's kind of where it took off. The second time I drank, I decided it was a good idea to take 10 shots of alcohol, 10 shots of vodka in like an hour. And that was definitely not a great idea. I was sick for days. 2 days, I was on my friend's couch. My friend's mother, the same friend's mother who had the boxed wine, you know, knew how to take care of me because she was a drinker. And she kept it hush-hush to my mom. You know, my mom was that mom that called parents and wanted to know where her kid was. And I guess at that point I found a mom who was willing to say, your kid's fine, she's at my house, and, you know, not tell her about the thing I did. So I was like, cool, you know, like, you know, that sucked that that happened to me. But I think it was a point where I was like, all right, like, I need to figure this out. You know, that's not going to happen again. And just the obsession to drink really started then. And it was, you know, weekends at first, during the summer mainly. And then sometimes throughout high school, it was in the mornings before school. I made friends with people that their parents weren't around a lot, because, like I said, mine were those parents that wanted to know, kept tabs. And I started stealing. I did start to notice the liquor in the house. It was like cooking Bacardi nastiness. And I would, you know, steal it and then put the water back in. And I started smoking cigarettes and stealing money for that. And it's just, I remember when I first came into the program and I was thinking, like, I was never dishonest, but I absolutely was with those things, you know. I never necessarily stole money from a friend, but I, you know, stole things little from my parents, the change out of the change drawer and the, you know, the alcohol from the cupboard, the cigarettes out of the box. But I just, over that time period, I remember, my parents weren't necessarily strict, but they did keep, you know, they wanted to know where we were, wanted to talk to parents. My sister, you know, she was, like I said, a good kid. They didn't really worry about her. They just, you know, she was kind of off doing her own thing. But me, like, and to go back a little, when I was younger, I had mentioned, like, looking up to my sister, and I think in my middle school years, I started to really, like, try to be like her. Because I was like, if I'm just like my sister, my parents, you know, they won't bother me necessarily, and I'll be okay. And so, you know, I just really remember that, like, looking at her and being like, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be like. And so in high school, you know, I tried to do the things that she was doing in high school, but I was not able to, because I was, you know, hyperactive still. I'd been diagnosed with ADHD and had, been prescribed medicine. But I didn't like the way the medicine made me feel. It made me feel like a zombie. And I was just like, I don't want to take this. So I stopped. And so that kind of led me to do things like skip school so that I could go drink and smoke green stuff and, you know, smoke cigarettes and just anything that could get me away from school, I was trying to do. made friends with older kids during that time period in high school. Don't really remember a lot about school. I was always a pretty good student as far as like grades and stuff, but I was not trying to put in effort. And I didn't think about like accelerating and like taking, you know, AP classes. I didn't think about college. I just thought about like, okay, what do I have to do to get out of here? And you know, the drinking was mostly on the weekends again. But it was some mornings, like if I would stay at my friend's house who her mom worked late at night cause she was a bartender. We would somehow get alcohol. I don't even know how. I think her brother was old enough and could get it for us. And then we would be taking shots at the bus stop. And it was just like, but I didn't think anything was wrong, you know? I mean, nothing physically was wrong with me. I wasn't getting into any trouble. I was pretty under the radar. I think, you know, I don't know how I didn't get caught sneaking out of school. I do remember, like, trying to manipulate teachers and being pretty okay at it. Like, the whole, you need a note to go to this classroom during study hall. Okay, well, I'll go get my note, and then I'll come back with the note and then tell the teacher that, and give them the note, and then I'll go tell the other teacher, oh, no, you know, they said it wasn't okay. I don't know. I don't know how I pulled it off. But I was pretty good at getting out of school and going to do what I want to do. And during this time, my brother, he kind of started following in my footsteps a little bit of, like, being rebellious is what I would say. Because to my mom, like, I was, you know, doing everything I was supposed to be doing. But behind closed doors and when I was away from home, I was not. And my brother, you know, he's getting a little older. He's 3 years younger than me. He kind of started following in my footsteps and he just started getting into trouble, though, and unlike me. And it was, he wasn't trying to hide it, whereas I was. He would run away and be gone for weeks at a time, and then it was, you know, up to my mom to go find him. And I remember just, the last thing that happened was he had some allegations against him, and he had to go to court, and then my mom came home and was like, we're moving to Virginia in 2 weeks, so pack your bags. And I was like, what? And at that point, I had had a boyfriend, and I was 16, and I had found somebody older who could buy me booze, and he was like my drinking buddy. And that's just literally what I remember was we just drank together. And it was on weekends, you know, I did all right in school. So I was furious because I was just about to be a senior in high school, this place that I had lived since I was 7. And I had some resentments about that when I moved down here because it was all my brother's fault. You know, I was like, why are we here? I don't want to be here. It was just, for me, in my head, it was the worst thing possible. The worst thing I could have ever imagined happening to me happened, and it was all my brother's fault. And I was so mad. And when I came down here, I didn't have any connections. I didn't know where to get alcohol, and I wasn't a very social, like, I wasn't outgoing enough to, like, find those friends that were doing it, also because we lived in the country and I didn't have a car. So I was riding the bus. I had had a car where I lived before. Now I don't. You know, it was rough. And I didn't have alcohol, and that was kind of like the first time that I was like, okay, I don't know how to cope with life. And I managed to get through like 2 years, and I was about 18 when we moved, and I had made up friends. I found friends that drank. But during that time where I wasn't drinking the first time, I started to do weird things with food. And now looking back, it's like I was trying to find a way to cope because I didn't have alcohol. And like in hindsight, like I would have never thought of that, you know? So I found friends that were drinking and, you know, partied it up. Fast forward, I tried to pick a college because I was like, all right, I'll go to college. And I picked West Virginia University. I went up there one weekend with some friends, and we had a party, and I was like, this is where I'm going to go. You know, I think it was at the time the number two party school or something. And I definitely like looked that up and made sure I knew that. And I was like, yes. So I went up there. I lasted a semester. and then I had some roommates, and it was a mess. They were like, whoa, what's wrong with you, basically. I was like, I don't know. I drink a lot. But so then I had the idea that I would just drop out of school and live there in Morgantown. And that lasted about 6 months. And I got in a car accident with a drunk driver and messed my face up pretty good. And so I was like, okay, I need to move back home. This is clearly too much for me. So I moved back home, and I'm in my parents' house. I'm trying to, like, have a job and all this stuff. And the thing is like, when I would be around my parents, I never wanted them to think that anything was, like, wrong. So I would, I don't know, just, like, pretend like everything's fine, and then I would go out on weekends, and that was how I drank, was leaving the house. I never drank in their home until there was some point where they were like letting me have parties. I think I was 20, and I was having parties at the house, and you know, keeping everybody in the basement so that they wouldn't see. But I don't think she thought it was a problem. You know, it was just kind of like normal phase kind of thing that kids go through. So then I was like, okay, I need to move away from here. This isn't working. You know, I can't drink how I want to drink, which is, you know, as much as possible. So I ended up moving to North or South Carolina, Charleston. And one of my friends just kind of mentioned it, like, oh, hey, it's warm down there. Do you want to go? And I was like, yeah, sure. It sounds cool. So we went. I saved up a little bit of money in that time just working and living at my mom's house. And once we got there, like, I was so excited to finally be as far away from them as I thought was possible, and be able to drink and know that they weren't going to, like, show up and, like, see me. And nobody else that I knew was there. So that was even better. Because at that point I had kind of, you know, started to burn bridges, and people didn't want to drink with me, and I couldn't imagine why. I was a blackout drinker, and I, you know, wouldn't remember a lot of things that I would do, and they would tell me, and I'd be like, no, like, I didn't do that. I was also a big fan of drinking and driving, and would drink and drive pretty much any time I would go anywhere. I would even offer to be the DD so that I would not drink. And that never worked. I always drank, and then would always drive a bunch of people. And my friends started, like, ditching me at places, and I'd be driving home alone, mad at them, like, you know, damn them, why'd they ditch me? Like, and then I'd be like, what's wrong with you? Why'd you leave last night? And they're like, 'cause you could not drive. Like, I was not getting in the car with you. And I'm thinking, like, man, they just let me drive. And they're like, no, we didn't. We asked you to stop, like, you know, just ridiculousness. And that's how my drinking continued. When I was in Charleston, I was down there for about 5 years. And that was the time where I would drink, like, in my apartment alone, because I wasn't at my mom's house. So I could, you know, have my alcohol there. And I would try to, like, go to the store and buy, like, a 24-ounce in the brown bag. And I would have my wine in a cup in the car. And I'd be like, this is fine. Like, I'm only having one, you know, 24-ounce. And that's how I'd try to limit myself. But I would drive back to the store later. And I, it was just, you know, I had started isolating at that point. And that I didn't really know a lot of people, but I started to find the party people and party and moved in with some roommates. And it was just a big party all the time. I will say that I was able to keep a job. And I did, too, thought it was just a phase. I thought, you know, I was just doing, it's fine. Like, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm able to keep a job. I'm paying my bills. Like, everything's fine. But my parents were constantly worried about me. I mean, I never called them. I never, you know, let them know. I would call maybe once a week. And my mom was like, well, you know, I just worry about you. And I just basically would say, well, I'm not my sister. Like, I'm not going to call you every day. Sorry. That's just how it is. And I just, you know, I really never thought about, like, anybody else's feelings, especially not, you know, my family's, and just, yeah, it was pretty awful in that way. So I was partying with some friends, and that's kind of, like, what I wanted, you know, was the party. I really liked the party, and then at the end it was just the isolation, because I didn't realize that, like, I was yelling at bartenders thinking they had, like, stolen my credit cards. Just a mess. Like, you know, I don't know. I just was not a fun person to drink around at that point. So I started drinking alone at home because I was like, this is better for everybody. And, yeah, it was just, I moved into a new apartment. You know, all the while, though, the feelings, like, I remember just being scared, being, it was like I would drink because, I mean, I don't know why, but I know I was just scared of everything. I had tried to go to school, like, while I was moving around all those times, and I just couldn't, you know, go for longer than a semester at a time, and then it was just like, all right, like, I'm going to fail at this, so I might as well just stop now. And, yeah, I'm trying to think. So the last year, I was drinking. I had just moved into this apartment with a girl that I had met a couple years before. We lived in a house together, and she didn't drink. She barely drank at all. She was a very athletic person, so she wasn't at the house a lot, which was perfect, because that's where I wanted to be, was at the house drinking. And, you know, she didn't really know anything about my problem, and I didn't either at the time. You know, I used to, about a year before that, I actually said to one of my friends, I think I'm an alcoholic, and I think it was just, I was, like, joking, you know, in a way, like, haha, it's kind of funny, because I was always the one drinking before anybody showed up to, like, drink. So I was pre-drinking before the pre-drinking began, and then was drinking on the way to the drinking, and it was just like, you know, some of my friends were drinking like that, but no, a majority of them weren't. And then I was like, okay, so this obviously isn't just like a thing that's a phase or that's normal. So let's see. Yeah, I was living in this apartment, and I didn't like my apartment. My roommate was nice. I was happy with that. I didn't like my job. In the meanwhile, I had, you know, been switching jobs about every 2 years because I was afraid of getting fired. So I would quit before they would fire me, and I would not have another job lined up, unfortunately. But I was always able to kind of find one at the last minute. And, you know, I was showing up hungover. I never drank on the job, fortunately. And I never got a DUI or anything like that, and I don't know how. I feel very fortunate that I never hurt anybody on the road, and that I never, you know, got a DUI. It didn't have to get that bad for me to get here. It was more the emotional, because alcohol stopped working. And I knew that, like, I was depressed, and I was like, this is making it worse. And this might even be the cause of it. And I remember thinking that. And I remember in the book it talks about, you know, we try different self-help books and we try, you know, changing our alcohols. And, like, I had done all that. And so I met somebody when I first moved down to Charleston. And so that was in 2010. And we had become friends, and I just remember, like, I had an emotional breakdown, and I was basically, like, in this park where it was, like, in the woods, and I hadn't drank that day. I'd drank, like, 2 days before, and I called them, and I was like, you know, like, I can't go back to my apartment. And I just was basically at the point where I wanted to kill myself. And I hate that. It's so sad to feel that way, you know? But I did. And I didn't want to live, but I wasn't going to kill myself, you know. So I made this phone call, and it was to my friend. And I had known that they were in AA, but I had no idea that that's what they were going to tell me they were going to do for me. And it just blows my mind to talk about it. I haven't talked about it since then, but, you know, they picked me up, and they took me to their house, and they were like, all right, you're going to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. And I was like, okay, I don't have a problem with drinking. Like, that's not, you know, that's not what's happening right now. And they were like, okay, just get in the car. And they had known, like, they knew me. They knew my drinking. Luckily, they knew what I needed when I didn't. And I think that's the incredible part, was, like, I had no idea the impact that this person was going to make on my life. And it's just overwhelming, because that was God. And, you know, I know that today in my heart, and I'll compose myself. I never would have thought that that would be something coming out of my mouth. And I had had my roommate at the time was very religious, and she had kind of told me, like, I think you need God in your life. And I was like, okay, like, I don't think that's true, but you can think that. And then that happened, and, you know, like I said, today I know that's God, and I don't know, like, why I stuck around, other than I had had enough. You know, I knew that I couldn't go back to my old life, because I just knew in my heart, I guess, that something bad was going to happen, and I felt it, like, this impending doom, like, okay, if I keep on the way I'm going, like, it's going to be really bad, so I need to do something. And she was like, you know, this is what A is like, I'm going to take you to some meetings. She took me to a meeting, and, thank you. And I don't remember exactly what was said during the meeting, you know, were like anything specific, other than I just remember people talked about their feelings and about how they felt. And that's something I'm not good at. I'm really not good at talking about my feelings. Even now, it's really hard for me. But, you know, I remember relating to all these people's feelings. And that was something I never felt before. Like, wow, people feel like that? And people, like, drank like that? Like, okay, I think I have something in common with these people. And everybody was so nice, and I just remember I felt like my first inkling of hope that everything was going to be okay, that I didn't have to drink anymore, and that I kind of felt like I knew what was wrong with me, and I'd always kind of like felt like there was something. And now I know today it's just something that happens. It's not something that I did wrong. It's not something that is done to me. It just is what it is. And this is the solution. And, you know, my sponsor was telling me all this stuff, and I was just like, I don't understand any of this. I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know anything about the steps. I didn't even know how you could be powerless over alcohol. I was like, I don't understand that. Like, how can I be powerless over alcohol? And the way she said it was, she said, do you feel like you can control your thoughts about alcohol? And I was like, no, because I was either thinking about it or trying not to do it. And it, either way, it was always about alcohol, you know? I had never successfully been able to stop drinking on my own without thinking about, man, this sucks, I'm not drinking. And it had really only been one time in my life where I just kind of, you know, I don't know, was white-knuckling it, I guess. Physically, I don't think I was dependent upon alcohol. I could function. I didn't have any delusions or tremors or anything like that. Luckily, like I said, I realized I'm lucky that I stopped before it got to that point. And, you know, I think that took that was hard for me to think of myself as an alcoholic for that reason. I was like, well, I didn't have tremors, and I didn't need to go to rehab, and, you know, But I had checked myself into a mental institution, you know, and thought I needed, you know, mental help. And when I found AA, I was like, wow, like, these people are thinking exactly like me. But once I don't know how exactly she convinced me that to understand what powerlessness was, other than, you know, I think about drinking or not drinking, and it's always about drinking. And once I take the first drink, I can't stop. And that's been my experience. I always black out, you know, no matter how much I try to control it. At one point, I used to get rashes on my chest when I would drink some liquors. So I switched to beer, and, you know, I mean, I don't know if that's a literal physical sign of an allergy, right? But it's also mental, and she taught me that. And, you know, that's how she kind of related the powerlessness. She also taught me that I'm powerless over my thoughts in that way, too. And at the time, I was powerless over most of my thoughts. You know, I was just thinking about myself, thinking about, like, fears, all my fears, things I was afraid of, and that controlled my life. And that's ultimately what would, I think, lead me to drink, you know, is to get out of my head, because it was just a bad, I love when somebody says it's a bad neighborhood, I always get beat up. And that's, you know, that's how it was. And so, you know, to think that I would drink over that, it's like, that's kind of reasonable, you know? I was having thoughts that made me, you know, I didn't know how to deal with. I also just didn't know how to deal with life. I didn't know how to go to school and get a degree and, you know, do all these things that I saw, you know, everybody around me doing, my peers. And I wanted that, you know? I wanted that really bad. So, you know, when I came in here and I started working these steps, I didn't have any idea of a God, of my understanding or yours. I didn't know, like, how to believe in God. And I didn't necessarily want, like, the idea of calling a higher power God. I don't know why. I didn't have any reason, other than I was rebellious. And had always kind of like, oh, if people believe in that, like, I'm not going to, kind of thing. But, you know, she said it could be whatever I wanted it to be. And I just remember walking out of my house one day and seeing this, like, tree. And I was like, okay, like, that tree is just there. And nothing's, like, you know, nothing's, it can't move. It's not doing anything. Like, how'd it get there, you know? People probably planted it, you know, but whatever. Like, I was like, these trees that just take care of themselves, and, you know, like, that's a higher power. Like, and that's kind of where I first saw it, was, like, in the trees in nature. And it's just something bigger than me, you know, something that I'm not responsible for. And today I know that that's pretty much everything. and so, you know, I just was willing to believe that whatever y'all were doing was going to work for me because it was working for you. And I used the group in that way to be, you know, a power greater than me and to get me through these steps. Because that's what it was at first. Okay, I just need to get through these steps. And I had no idea that, you know, you guys kept talking about a spiritual awakening. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know how that was going to happen to me. I was one of those people that wanted to know, like, you know, exactly when is this going to happen? What is it going to be like? It's got to be a one, you know, a set thing that just happens to everybody. I don't know why I thought that, but basically what I've learned is that everything I thought is not true about, you know, my life before. And so when I came to step three, I didn't know how I was going to do that. I was like, all right, this step is hopeless. Like, I'm not going to make it past this one. And my sponsor was really great to just tell me that all I had to do was make a decision to do the rest of the steps. And that was how, you know, fortunately for me, that's what I needed, because I was still new in believing in God. So I was willing to believe, and I was willing to believe it was working for y'all. And I gave it a chance, and I decided I would be able to do the rest of the steps. Step four, I was terrified because I had never told anybody how I felt about anything, you know, unless it was under the influence or had something to do with, you know, going to party. So I was really terrified. And at that point, I made a friend with somebody who was in similar sobriety as I was. I think I was about 2 months. And she had just done hers. And I called her and I was like, what happened? What was it like? Tell me, I'm terrified. And she was like, you're going to get a lot of nods. And, you know, your sponsor has probably done a lot of the same things you've done, if not worse. And I was like, what, really? And that was exactly my experience. You know, my sponsor shook her head at a lot of my stuff and laughed at a lot of it. And I was so relieved after, because not only did I get everything out, but, you know, our connection deepened. Not only me and my sponsors, but I think mine and God's. Step five, we did that, you know, soon after step four, and I didn't really have a problem with the rest of the steps after that. Eight and nine, you know, I was hesitant, but I don't know. Everything just kind of changed after step four, and I was kind of just propelled into doing the rest of the steps. Things have come up, definitely, and I guess I would say I've done 10 steps over them, but it's, you know, things that I forgot that I did during my drinking that just would come back up, and I would need to talk to her about in a step four manner. And I didn't feel the need to, yet I haven't felt the need to write it all down in the same way that I did the step four. And I do plan to do the steps again, probably soon. But, you know, that's what step 10 has been for, and I do that every day, and, you know, try to not... Lately, I will say that I've noticed, especially in the second year, I am able to think a lot more about what I say before I say it, and a lot of times I am able to not say anything, because sometimes things in my family, I moved back in with my family at about year one and a half. I moved back up here so that I could go back to school, and I'm living with my family, and I could not have done it before a year and a half. There's just no way I would have drank. I couldn't have lived with them again, you know, drinking. There's just no way that would have been possible without me going off the deep end, you know. But today I'm able to just take things as they come and not necessarily react all the time. And that's amazing. You know, it wouldn't have necessarily been good if I was to react, because I would have opinions about things, especially when it comes to my brother, about things he was doing, or how my mom should handle situations, or you know, what I thought about what he was doing, because I don't know if he has the disease, but he definitely is on a path that is not going to be good for him if he continues. But today, I know that I can't, there's nothing I could say to him other than, you know, do you want to come to a meeting? And just try to listen if he needs to talk. And, you know, if I've been there, say, hey, I've been there. And he's talked to me about one time, and then I mentioned AA, and he stopped talking to me, like, about personal things like that. So, you know, and I would want to do, you know, anything. And it's hard to not want to do something for your family, but it just is what it is. All I can do today is lead by example and hope that he gets here. So I try not to dwell on that. I've learned to turn things over a lot easier. It's still a work in progress, because this was not, you know, my natural thing to do, these things, the things that were taught here, but it's gotten easier as I've gone, that's for sure. And
you know, I don't have to be perfect today, but I'm definitely working on being better than I was today and just asking God's help today. During sobriety, the prayers in the big book have been prayers that I say. And for the first year and a half, they were, you know, every day it was the step 3 prayer, the step 7 prayer, reading pages 86 and 87. And just doing those things and getting myself into the habit, because I didn't believe that this was going to work, and then I had to make it a habit. And then once I started doing that and it started working, I had faith and I had, you know, the ability to know that this was working in my life. And, you know, I see it because I'm able to go to school now and not feel like I can't do it. I have faith in myself and my higher power, that anything that is happening or that happens, I can get through, and not have to drink. You know, I remember over Christmas break, my brother had got my sister a bottle of vodka for Christmas. And I will say I probably thought about drinking for probably 2 months into sobriety, to where I would leave a meeting and think about, you know, going by the store. And I don't know when that stopped happening, but it just did. And I would even make little deals like, okay, if that bottle of wine that my roommate had the other day is still in the fridge, I'm going to drink it. And I would get home and my phone would ring. And it would be somebody from the program. And it would be like this little intervention that, you know, kept me from doing it. And, you know, today it's sometimes it's just the smallest things is like, I can't even think of a recent example, but I don't know. Something will just, like, give me a sign, or, like, I'll hear something that somebody said, and then later that day, like, it'll come up again, and it will be exactly what I heard. And, you know, I don't have anything other than that's God. And so, you know, my idea of God, it's hard to explain because I just don't even try to question it. I tried to question it so much early on about, like, well, if God is real, then why is this happening? You know, things like that. And I just finally stopped doing that, you know. And I think that was about at 6 months. And that was, you know, I had already done my 4th step, and I was feeling better and everything. And I still every now and then had those questions, though, that, like, you know, I don't know, maybe little bits of doubt. And it went away. And today I don't doubt, you know, that I am an alcoholic. I don't doubt that God's real. I don't doubt that he is doing for me what I can't do for myself, because he's shown me that. He got me here and put people in my life to get me here. And that's, I mean, just the way that he works is great. When I first got sober, I went to 90 and 90. That was really what my sponsor suggested I do. And that was the one thing that I was willing to do, was, okay, I'll go to 90 and 90 and, you know, try to work these steps. I got a service position helping a women's group, which I was not fond of being an all-women's group, but I learned that I can trust women and I can have friends that are women, because it was never that I didn't like them. It was that I felt threatened because I wasn't comfortable with my own, you know, self. I didn't think I was good enough. Or I just thought they were better. But I was able to establish relationships with women and, you know, be of service in that group. And that, I think, you know, just kept me coming back. I would go to treatment centers and just share, you know, about anything, and in hopes of, you know, 12th step, just carrying the message. Today I have a service position as a treasurer in the Culpeper New Birth Group. And I'm going to school today for something that I've wanted to do but never thought I could. And my relationships with my family have gotten so much better because my relationship with myself has gotten better. And, you know, it hasn't been the obstacles that I've had have mainly been the doubt about the higher power. But I was so willing, because I did not want to go back to my life that I had and the way it was, that I just, my sponsor would say, and all the little phrases that y'all would say and that were on the walls and a lot of the meetings I would go to helped so much. I mean, there was one that I used to literally say every day. I think it was one day at a time, you know, and I would just say that all day, every day. And I don't know, just all the little phrases really helped me. And but she used to say, act as if in order to become. And I was like, that's just fake it till you make it. Like, I'm not doing, you know, like, I thought this was supposed to be. And she's like, no, like, you're misunderstanding. Like, you know, if you don't necessarily believe in something, you just act as if you do in order to do it. And, you know, I still can't reiterate what that means, you know, but it, to me, just meant keep coming back and keep praying. And through my experience, I've been able to get through a lot and not felt the need to drink. And, you know, I get overwhelmed with gratitude because, well, I never, ever would have imagined being 2 years sober. 2 years and 2 months, and I'm on my 18th day of not smoking, which is hard. One of the hardest things I've ever done. Holy crap. probably even harder than drinking, honestly. But, so I don't know. I might be a little emotional because of that. I'm not kidding, man. I've tried it before. Day three always got me. I freak out. But, you know, I know that that's God. And I've been asking for his help this time, and I've been getting it. And so I hate being emotional. I hate talking about my feelings and then crying in front of people. I'm like, I'm going to be traumatized, but, you know, it's just what's on the plate today. So, you know, I just know that I'm going to continue to ask for God's help and, come back and try to work these steps the best I can. I used to think I had to be perfect, and thank God that I don't think that today because of this program. I'm not as hard on myself as I was before. I don't try to be like my sister because we're entirely different. She's having this huge wedding in Texas in May, and I'm like, I will never have this, Mom. I'm going to get married at the courthouse. Like, we are just night and day different, you know? And that's okay today. And, you know, it's just the things that I have gotten from this program already. I used to think that the promises were, what do we say? Do we think that these are, what's the word?
Extravagant.
Extravagant. Thank you. And I was like, yeah, those are very extravagant to me. But I was like really hopeful that since y'all didn't think they were extravagant, that I wouldn't either one day. And, you know, slowly but surely I could see them, those things coming true in my life. And some days it's more than others, but, you know, it comes and goes. And overall, the majority of my days are great, and I feel grateful. And I start my day saying thank you because I just feel grateful every day when I wake up, and I didn't used to. I used to feel dread. So thank you for letting me speak. And I don't know how to end this, but other than... thanks.